So a father's key focus, in my estimation, should be leaving some kind of legacy. And a legacy, especially as I get older, I think a lot more about it. What kind of legacy am I leaving to my family? So there's different ways you can look at a legacy. You can look at it financially. What kind of financial legacy am I leaving my children or my grandchildren and great-grandchildren? What am I doing? What's my game plan? Is it to spend everything I've got and then check into glory and leave my children nothing? Or is it to leave them that which can bless their life? And Solomon thought a lot about this. He wrote in Proverbs 13:22, a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children or to his grandchildren, which means that must be a pretty good nest egg that your kids got blessed and then your grandchildren got blessed. So that's a good legacy to leave your children, financial stability. I thank God for a father who has done that for me and for my children and his great-great-grandchildren. It's an awesome thing. Another way to look at legacy is just a spiritual legacy as a man. When you look at that, then it's like, what kind of character legacy am I leaving them? What kind of model did I present to them character-wise? What kind of moral values will I leave those if within my care that they can emulate? What kind of work ethic did I show them? Did I really get after it and work hard to show them how to work? And what was my spiritual example as I lived among them? Did they see me having a vibrant walk with Jesus? Did I go to church? Did I serve in the church? Did I share my faith? Was I a man of prayer? Was I in the Word of God? I mean, what kind of legacy am I leaving spiritually? And when I think about Father's Day, even though my father's with Christ now, I had a man that was that kind of spiritual leader as well. He left a financial legacy, also left a spiritual legacy. So I could say I am who I am today because of my dad. And what he did for my life. If you want to study a great father from the scriptures, there is no better than studying Abraham in the Old Testament. Genesis 12 through Genesis 25, don't worry, we're not covering that many chapters. I thought about it and realized how slow I go. That would never happen. So what we're going to do is we're going to focus on the life of Abraham this Father's Day and then for the next several Father's Days, studying his life because there's so much to learn from him on how to be a great man because he was a great man. Abram was his initial name. Av in Hebrew means father. Avram, Ram means to be exalted. So Hebrew's easy. You just take words that are stapled together, like in German, and you can then translate them. So if Av is father and Ram means to be exalted, you wed those two together and you can translate. What's his name? You guys are so, thank you. Yeah, you are so good. Yeah, I was speaking to the church at large, but you too, you as well. Thank you. Exalted father. So your husband is an exalted father. And that's what a father should be. In fact, today's the day to really exalt him. But we know that God chose this man and radically changed his life. And then when he changed his life radically in chapter 17 of Genesis, changes his name from Avram to Avraham. What does that mean? Well, he took another word, Hamon, and wedded that to the word Av. And Hamon in Hebrew means a large group of people. So he's the father of a large group of people. Which people? You know the Torah, right? Yeah, so don't be quiet. Who was the people? Israel. Yeah, he was the progenitor of the nation of Israel because through his line, through the line of Shem, is going to come the Messiah. And so God says, oh, I want to bring the Messiah to bring salvation to those who will come to know him. And I'm going to bring it through the line of Shem. It's going to come through Terah, the father of Abraham. And I'm going to pick a man and I'm going to change his life and he's going to come follow me. And from him will come a great nation. And then from him, I'm going to bless all nations, which would be, if you were Jewish, if we are not Jewish, then to them, we are merely goyim or goy. I'm a goy in the singular. I'm a Gentile. And so he says, I'm going to bless the world through one man. What's interesting is you might think that you're not that significant, but God says, I can do great things just with one man, one father. And so we want to study how God teaches us through Abraham's example of what a father is all about. We have a lot of Abraham types in our church. So I'm here to encourage you, to challenge you with a couple of concepts. I only have two things I'm going to talk about today, but before I talk about these two concepts, I'm going to present to you a question that we're going to answer. It's a question. What is, you should be thinking about this as a father. What spiritual legacy am I leaving to my family and to my friends? Am I leaving them a spiritual legacy? When you look at Abraham's legacy, it all started in a place called Ur of the Chaldees. How would you like to be from there? Hey, where are you from? Ur. Serious? What a name is that? Ur of the Chaldees. Where was that located? Now, it's kind of hard to see that map, isn't it? Is that true? Yeah. So you can get the main idea that this is the Mediterranean, this is the Red Sea, that'd be the Dead Sea, and this over here is the Persian Gulf that goes down here. And these two feelers that come out from his, I think of the Persian Gulf as a giant bug, and out from him are two antenna, and those antenna going from the west to the east are the like the movie E.T., Euphrates and the Tigris River. That's how I remember them. I know it's academic. But Ur of the Chaldees was in that region, about 150 miles north of the Persian Gulf, in this region down here, where he was. And this was an amazing place. From 3800 BC to 450 BC, Ur was known as the happening city. I mean, it was they invented all kinds of great stuff. Language started here. Could you imagine taking the tonal quality of speech and putting it down into actual written language and getting everybody to agree? What's that little squiggly line represent? Well, those little lines, when in that combination, that's going to have a ha sound. Okay. Everybody agree? Yeah. Yeah. This little line here, this has a ha sound, like you're spitting. Everybody agree that that has a ha sound? Yeah, we agree. Got it. Ha and ha. What's that little line mean? Well, that's a sh sound. Okay, good. How hard would that be? Hard. They invented the Sumerian language. They were the first ones to be put it down in a written form. Eventually came Akkadian, Babylonian cuneiform, all these extremely difficult languages, the first languages. I don't even know how they did it. Because the Babylonian cuneiform, that was one of the requirements when I started a PhD that I didn't finish. But that's what you had to learn, is Babylonian cuneiform. And we called it the trumpet language because it looked like those long trumpets, you know, and all laid at different angles, and they all had a tonal quality. And you're reading this going, who thought this up? Who said this is a great way to do it? And so he comes from this region that is very, very smart. They are known for trade. They built stuff like ziggurats. These were like giant pyramids that had steps on them, massive ziggurats, a place of great wealth, great trade, etc. That's where he's from, the town of what's happening. And they're polytheists. So is he. And then God changed him. When you came to know Christ as a man, did it change you? One person? Did it change you? My relationship with Christ, I didn't have one until I got saved, and it absolutely changed me. Notice what says Stephen before Stephen is stoned in Acts chapter 7 for standing on the grounds that Jesus was the Messiah. He gives his defense to the people who are going to stone him in chapter 7 of Acts. And notice what he says about Abraham. He says, my brothers and fathers, listen, the God of glory appeared to our father Abraham. Where? Well, you all know the story. While he was in Mesopotamia, before he had settled in Haran, which is 600 miles north of the city of Ur. And he said to him, go forth from your land and from your kinsfolk to the land that I'm going to show you. So he went forth from the land of the Chaldeans and settled in Haran. And from there, after his father died, he made him migrate to this land where you now dwell, which would be Israel, Canaan land, the promised land. God appeared to Abraham, the polytheist. And what we're going to learn is he's going to be called when he's 75 years old. Now think about that. Anybody here 75? Not yet? When you're 75, you're probably thinking, I'm just going to live on my investments, coast into glory. I got it all ready to go. I know how much I got from Social Security. I got all my investments paying 4%. I'm burn rate 4%. This money's going to last till we're 95, honey. We both have to be dead by the time we're 95 because we're going to run out of money. That kind of thing. You're thinking ahead, okay? 75, and God's going to get his attention when he's like a senior citizen. So what this just tells you as a side note, if you're 75 and thinking, hey, I've had my career, God might be looking going, hey, I got other things for you to do. Anyway, it's too convicting. We're moving on. So Stephen says, God called him when he was in Ur of the Chaldees and told him, I want you to go somewhere. So did he tell him where he was going to go? No. What's up with God? Our church has men who want to know. God, you want me to go somewhere? Serious? Like where? I'm not going to tell you. How many miles is it away? I'm not going to tell you. Just start going. I mean, serious. And so God says, go. And so Abraham, what does Abraham do? He goes. And so think about him leaving his town where he had been for generations. So he's going to trade security for insecurity. He's going to trade his comfort for discomfort. Because I don't know about you. How many have ridden on a camel? Was it fun? It's weird, huh? It's weird. Be honest. It's weird. The first time I did it, and the only time I did it, I'm like, I'm not doing that again. I was standing right after 9/11. I was in Israel. I was in the Judean wilderness. There was a Bedouin with a camel, and we were going to get on this camel, me and a Marine. So the retired Marine, got the back seat, which was real low to the ground. You just had to kind of step into it. The main part was a big saddle that was harder to get into. So when the Bedouin got down like this, and I didn't understand what he was saying to me, but when he got down like that, that's a universal sign for what? Put your foot in there. So I put my foot in there and he threw me up there. But before he threw me up there, I walked in front of the camel. Never, never walk in front of a camel. Why? They spit. And as I was being a lame Westerner from California walking in front of this camel, that female camel opened her mouth about as wide as the height of my podium. And I watched her mouth slowly open like an elevator door. And then as I'm standing there looking at this gaping hole, she lets out this terrifying scream, and the odor from those yellow-green teeth, it was all over me. I'm like, this is sick. So then when I finally got on this camel and it got up, I'm like, oh my gosh, how far am I from the earth? And then it started moving. It felt like I was going in like several directions at the same time. And after about 10 feet, I'm like, I got to get off this thing. I thought to myself as I'm moseying along through the desert, how in the world did Abraham, as a senior citizen, ride this thing? That's what was going through my head. Because from Ur the Chaldees to Haran going north is about 600 miles. You're going to go tell your wife, hey, we're moving. Where are we going? I have no idea. How do you know we're moving? The unknown God told me. Huh? You really? How are we getting there? Camels. Serious. There's no beamers. There's nothing nice. No, it's a camel. That's the Cadillac of the day. That's what we're going on. And so he puts him on that, and he takes off and trades his entire life to go where God wants him to go. So when you think about the fact they get to Haran, his dad dies there. Terah dies there when he's 205 years of age. When his dad dies, it doesn't tell us in the text in Genesis 11 how long they lived there. Must have been for a while. When his dad finally died, Abraham could have said, it's been a long time since that unknown God spoke to me and told me to follow him, and we followed him this far. Haven't heard from him since. Maybe we'll just stay here. No. His dad dies, and he's like, we got to get moving. And when he gets moving is where he begins to show us our first legacy point I want to talk about, of two legacy points. I call them a legacy snapshot. Legacy snapshot number one. When God challenges you, like he challenges Abraham to get up and go, what do? You argue with God. Bad idea, right? So when God challenges you to go, and it's clear that he wants you to go, what do? Rise to the occasion. Yeah, God, you opened the door. You want me to leave? You want me to go? What do you want me to do? So you're all obviously living on the East Coast here in this beautiful environment. Did you come here joyfully or kicking and screaming? Kicking and screaming, yeah. Confession on the front row, yeah. How many came here and it's like, Lord, DC, serious? I don't want to come there. I can think of lots of reasons to come here. Beautiful weather. I'm from San Diego. So am I. I'm from San Diego. Hey, praise God for you. Yeah. Better weather. Yeah. But they got bugs here. They got humidity and stuff like that. But think they got trees. National monuments. I mean, there's lots of great things here. So, you know, God, you want me to go there? I'll go. And so he says, hey, I want you to leave and I'll tell you where you're going. Just follow me. So what do we read in Genesis chapter 12, verse 1? Lord said to Abraham, what did he tell him? Go forth from your land, your relatives, leave your kinfolk, and your father's house to a land that I will show you. He didn't tell him where he's going. He didn't tell him. Now, this is where the Hebrew is most interesting. And this is... So Hebrew, you read from right to left, like this direction, okay? So this is, when they laid this out, if you read Hebrew, this is actually jacked up because this is supposed to be up here. But you probably don't know that, right? yeah. So it doesn't matter to you. So when the verse starts out here, it says, "Ve'yomer Yahweh el Avram lech lecha." So what's lech lecha? So lech lecha, because I researched it this week, lech lecha means go, you go. That's the only time in the entire Torah that appears. Because I looked, I have a grammatical tool that will search grammatical formulations. So the question is, how many times does the command lech lecha appear in the Old Testament? One time. Who was it given to? Abraham. Significant? Slightly. God says, I'm going to change the world through one man. But that guy's got to do something. He's got to get up and he's got to go. And so he did. So did he ask questions? No. If it would have been you, what kind of questions would you have formulated for God? Where am I going?
Why?
Yeah, why am I going? I like where I live. Yeah. When am I going? How long are we going to be on the road? What else would you say? Yeah, what?
Are you sure everybody?
Everybody, yeah, okay, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, do I have to bring the kids? Yes, you have to bring the kids. Yeah, how many servants are going with us? Do we need weapons along the way? Is my wife, Sarah, is wondering places to shop. She's kind of wondering, are there any Buc-ee's? Anyway, isn't it funny to see all the foreigners coming here for the World Cup or freaking out at Buc-ee's? Anyways, moving on. So God tells him, at 75 years of age, I want you to get rolling and go. So he does. Verse 1 and 2 says, when you go, I'm going to make you a great nation. I'm going to bless you. I will make your name great. And it must be great because we're still talking about him. And you're going to be a blessing. He says, I'm going to bless those who bless you, curse those who curse you. All of the families of the earth will find a blessing in you. Abraham went as the Lord directed him, and Lot went with him. That's his brothers who had died. That's his son. So that's his nephew. Abraham was how old when he left? 75. So when most people are kicking back and enjoying the good life, God tells him, nah, you need to trade your nice cushy life for a life on the road. You're going to live in a tent for years. I need you to leave. And he left. And he says, to tell you what, I'm going to make you a great man, and I'm going to bless the entire world through you at 75. And there's an ancient promise in here that transcends all time. If you bless Abraham and his people, Israel, God then blesses you. If you curse them, then God curses you. Still true today? Yeah. So anybody ask me, because they ask me all the time, how should we respond to Israel in our day and age? You know, it's not a perfect nation. What did God promise? I'll bless them. Because if you study, they are the apple of God's eye. And Paul says in Romans 9, he says, is God finished with Israel? And in Greek, he says, meganoito. Meganoito means no way. The harshest way to say no way in Greek is meganoito. And Paul says, no, God's not done with Israel. Why? Because he's going to redeem them as a nation. Because Paul read Zechariah chapter 12 and chapter 13. The Messiah is going to save them. And so if you bless them today, God will bless you. If you curse them and oppose them, God will oppose you. It's a whole nother sermon. But it's given to him as a promise. I'm going to make the world blessed because you lived. Think about your life as a man. I'm only one man. You're only one man. What could I possibly do? Who knows what children and will come through your children and your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren? Who knows what they will do to impact the world? God can do great things through a person sold out to him. That was Abraham. That should be you. When I think about sacrifice and going, when you get the opportunity to go, I think of my father, Al. Geddes Albert Baker. That's a Southern name. Like Gettysburg. My dad's name was Geddes. I was like, who's named Geddes? But he was. He's the only Geddes I've ever met in my entire life. Comes from a little Southern town called Kershaw, South Carolina. Little town. They'd been there since the 1700s. I've seen the graveyard. All my family kinfolk are in it. You can do a genealogical study just walking around. There they are. They're all in the graveyards by all the churches. When the war broke out, my dad had 10 sisters, no brothers in that little town. They had a little town with a railroad track that ran through the middle of the town. They had a cotton mill. More kids you had, the more people to work, more money for your family. So my grandma and grandpa got smart, had 11 children, 10 girls and a boy. My grandma was one of 16. My grandpa was one of 10. They never moved. That's why I never married anybody from there. Because my aunts asked me over the years, every year we'd go there, honey, you need to marry a beautiful girl from this region. I'm thinking more like San Diego. Yeah. No, you don't want to marry kinfolk there, right? So when the Korean War rolled around and my dad's like, hey, I'm an American, I love my country, I got to do what I can do to support the country, he joins the U.S. Navy. I don't even think he did. He did, thank you. There's four of them in our church right now, but the rest are Army or Marines or something like Air Force, Space Force, Coast Guard, and all of them. He joined the Navy. I don't even know if my dad had ever even been to the ocean where he was at. He joins the U.S. Navy. They assign him, I think it's to a PBY unit, like a flying airplane that can land in the water. When he first went to the Philippines, he's like, one of the engines went out on the plane. He went to the pilot. He said, I'm just kind of worried we lost an engine and we're flying over shark-infested waters. And the pilot of the plane told my dad, son, don't worry. We're in a boat that can land on the water. Oh, I forgot about that. Because they could. Great thing. I don't think they make those anymore, do they? No. What did my dad do? He left the security of Kershaw, goes to San Diego to suffer for God in the U.S. Navy. Goes from there to the Philippines and gets involved in the Korean War and everything. Eventually ends back at Treasure Island where they discharge him. But before they discharged him in San Francisco, he had his last duty station was in El Centro, California, at an air base for Marines and Navy pilots called Sealy Air Base. It's in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the desert. He gets assigned there to this godforsaken hot place. He decides he needs to go to church. Goes to church, First Baptist Church in El Centro, California. About 500 people went to church there. Meets a young lady. Her name? Sue. She meets him. She's 15. He's 21. Scary, isn't it? That's what I said. They get engaged when she's 15. A week after she turns 16, they got married. They stayed married for, I don't know, 56 years, something like that, till my dad died. But he left Kershaw. When they got engaged, when they're engaged, they got on a train and went from Southern California to Kershaw, South Carolina, on a train in a Pullman car. Had separate rooms, of course. We checked. I asked. And they always told me, son, things were different back in the 50s. Mm-hmm. Sure. They got back to the East Coast. I asked my mom before she died in January. I said, Mom, like, what happened when you got to Kershaw as a teenager and you're with this sailor, you know? Like, what did his family say to you? They said, they told us we should just get married and move here because you're from Arkansas. He's from South Carolina. You know everybody in town. You can get a job. It'd be easy living here. All the kinfolk to take care of you and everything. What do you think my dad did? He's like, I think God wants us to live in California. They're like, son, you don't know anybody there. I know I don't, but I know Sue. And so my dad decided to stay there, and he stayed in California. He was Abraham, and he needed a job after the Navy, so he joined U.S. Border Patrol. And he did that for a couple years as a guard in a detention facility. And then he took a test at the El Cortez Hotel downtown San Diego and became a U.S. Customs agent. And this is a guy that hadn't finished high school. And then he got his GED. And then he ascended up through the ranks to become the district director of U.S. Customs in San Diego. I went to his office one time at the federal building downtown San Diego. I said, Dad, you have this room overlooking the Coronado, you know, island. Well, everybody that works for you is like an attorney or a PhD. I go, this is amazing. He goes, son, they don't know how to lead. He said, they're just educated, but I know men. I know how to lead. And he did. And God blessed him. So in that little tiny town in the middle of the desert and nowhere, that's where they got married. They had us. That's where I came to know Jesus. My sister Marla came to know Jesus. My sister Julie came to know Jesus. That's where we went to church. That's where we got in church service, choirs, leadership. That's where I started preaching down in Mexico, where I get Mexican friends at school. Hey, Enrique, what are you doing this weekend? Nothing, man. Hey, come with me, man. What? Translate for me. I took a ton of friends down there with me. Christians, non-Christians, translating church services for me. Some said a lot of stuff I didn't say. Because I asked my one friend, I said, what? I know some Spanish. I asked my one friend, Paul Tamayo, like, what did you just say? I said a sentence, you spoke for a paragraph. He goes, do you know Spanish at all? Yeah. Okay, you know what essay means? It's like men. He looks at me and goes, I was helping you, essay. I still to this day don't know what Paul told that congregation. But all that stuff happened because my dad got the call from God to go to California. I mean, unbelievable. The family's like, where are you going? Why are you doing that? And God blessed him and then blessed us, all of my family, all the friends that they had, the people that still impact my life today, all came from that little tiny town. And I'm who I am because my dad was Abraham. So when it came time for me to do something radical and I get married to our next door neighbor, Liz, during the gas crisis, it was convenient. I didn't have to drive anywhere. I planned that one well. Anyway, Liz and I got married, and we left, and we got married. We were married for a year before we went to Dallas Seminary. When we crossed the border at Yuma to go to Dallas Seminary, she had never left the state of California. She had never seen Arizona. She had never seen New Mexico. We got to El Paso. We got outside of El Paso, and there's a sign that says, Dallas, Texas, 595 miles. She goes, it's 595 miles to the middle of the state? Mm-hmm. It's a big state. She had never left. But we made a radical move. We had our furniture coming. What furniture we had. Our furniture was coming. We get to Dallas, Texas. We have no jobs. We have very little money. We have two cars. We don't have a place to live. We can't afford a credit card because no one will get us credit because we ain't got no money. And we show up in town. Here we are. And my dad was with us in case we needed a safety net. He was there to co-sign. And God plugged us in, and Liz got a job, I got a job, God blessed us, and we did something radical, and God blessed. So years later, when I left my last church after 19 years, and we felt we'd hit all the benchmarks we needed to make at that last church, Abraham was calling. And so then we told God, Lord, we were at this California church for 19 years. We'll follow you to the next place where you want us to go. And we feel that these Western states are where you need to pick your will. Yeah. Told God, I'll go to Arizona, Colorado, Washington State, maybe Oregon. But that's about it. God laughs from heaven and says what? He's like, serious? You're going to the D.C. area. And so we came. We left Amanda in our driveway. Hardest day of my life is driving away from her. But you got to make a sacrifice, right? And God blesses. Now she lives here. It's just the way God is. When you do something radical, God then blesses you radically. When's the last time you did something radical for God as a husband, as a father? That God talked to you and you did it. And so if God brought you here kicking and screaming, stop doing that and thank him. Because he brought you here for a reason. And if say you're a colonel, and you're up to be a general, and you got three looks, and you've gone through two, and you're going through the third one, and maybe they don't pick you. And then what? That's exciting. You say, God, now what do you want me to do? I want to be Abraham. I want to go where you want me to go. Be excited. Maybe you started a business and it fell apart and it's not solvent and you spend a ton of capital to make the business, but it didn't happen. And now you're like, now what? Wait for God. God to talk to you. God to show you. And when he shows you, go through the door. Number two, legacy snapshot number two. I love this one. When there's a family storm, be the stiller of the storm. Don't be a war maker, be a peacemaker. That was Abraham. He was a radical man in his faith with Christ. He'd follow the Lord anywhere. And then when it came down to his family, when a family storm hit, he stepped in to create peace. Who went with him when he left left Ur of the Chaldees? Well, it spells SALT, Sarah, Abraham, Lot, and Terah, right? The acronym. He had a man with him named Lot, his nephew, who becomes a problem. Do you have anybody in your family that might be a problem? It's obviously not you, right? Because you're at church. Anybody in your family, just think about him right now. If somebody in my family line, it's like, oh my Lord, where did they come in? Their DNA's messed up or something. I don't know where they came from. They're messing up the entire family with what they do. You got that person in mind right now? Anybody? You do. Okay, just keep that thought, all right? He had Lot. So Abraham, the godly man, has Lot trailing along with him. It says in chapter 13, verse 5, now Lot, who went with Abraham, also had flocks and herds and tents, and the land could not sustain them while they were dwelling together, for their possessions were so great they were not able to remain together, and there was strife between the herdsmen of Abraham's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. And then he throws in parenthetically, oh, and by the way, while they're fighting over there, these worshipers of the living God, who's watching them fight? It says, now the Canaanite and the Perizzite were dwelling in the land. Why does it throw that in there? It's telling him, if your family's melting down and you're the godly leader of the family, you're the husband, the father, the leader, and you're fighting as a family, and you call yourself a Christian family, you got to cut that out. Why? Because there's Canaanites and Perizzites watching what you're doing and thinking to themselves, man, those are people following God. Why would I want to do that? It doesn't look like it's optimal. So Abraham sees this and says, hey, we got to stop this. What do shepherds do when they fight? What kind of thing do they have in their hand? A staff, like a long one, with like a hook on it. You get that around somebody else's neck, you could do a lot of damage, right? It's kind of the other end. You could do a lot of poking. I mean, no telling. They were fighting. What are they fighting over? Hey, Yehuda, what are you thinking? We found all this grass for our sheep. Why are you horning an arm? Get out of here. Fighting among themselves. Abraham hears it. Because dissension always kind of goes uphill to the people at the top. Abraham hears about it. And so what does he do? Well, Lot was with him. There's strife. And so he needs to problem solve as the leader. It says in verse 8, Abraham said to Lot, this is amazing what he says to his nephew. Please, and he's going to say please twice. Please, let there be no strife between you and me, nor between my herdsmen and your herdsmen. Why? We're brothers or we're kinfolk. Is not the whole land before you? Answer, yes. Please separate from me. What's the proposition? You go to the left, I'm going to the right. You go to the right, I'm going to go to the left. What did he just do? Well, who is Abraham? He's head of the clan. He's El Jefe. You know Spanish? What does that mean? He's the boss. What could he have said to Lot? Hey, Buster, you've been tagging along with me since Ur the Chaldees, griping and moaning and groaning all the time, and now your men are fighting my man. This is ridiculous. You need to take off and go find some land somewhere else. I'm sticking right here where all the green grass is and the water is, and you need to go figure out your life. Could have told him that, huh? But what did he do? He said, you know, I'm going to do a peaceful thing. I'm going to let you have the pleasure to pick first. Pick first. So what did he do? He chose to be selfless instead of selfish. He chose to be completely generous when he didn't have to be. How did Lot respond? Verse 10, what did Lot do? He lifted up his eyes, because they're on a mountaintop, looking down into the Jordan Valley. From their mountain peak of about 2,500 feet, they could see the land of Israel. They could see the mountains, the land, the valleys, and they can look down and see the Jordan Rift Valley, because I've been in this region before. You can see down in the Jordan Rift Valley, down to the Dead Sea. And he lifts up his eyes, and he saw the valley of the Jordan, that it was, what? Well watered. Everywhere. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So before God changed the topography of the land of the Jordan down by the Dead Sea, it was like a Garden of Eden, like the land of Egypt as you go to Zoar. So Lot chose for himself all the valley of the Jordan, and Lot journeyed eastward. Thus they separated from each other. Lot was an unwise father because he lived based upon what his eyes saw. He was not a man of faith at this point. He chose the easy life. Not the hard life. He chose to be selfish, not selfless. What would a classy man have done when the older man says, I'll let you choose what you want to choose first? If he was a man of great caliber, what should he have said? I can't do that because you're Abraham, you're the head. Now, he took for himself and let Abraham kind of figure his life out. What happened to Abraham is the question. Verse 12. Abraham settled in the land of Canaan while Lot settled in the cities of the valley and moved his tents as far as Sodom. Now the men of Sodom were wicked exceedingly and sinners against the Lord. And the Lord said to Abraham after Lot separated for him, hey, I got a deal for you. Like what? Lift up your eyes and look from the place where you are, northward, southward, eastward, westward, all the land that you will see. I'm going to give it to you and your descendants forever. So Lot moved into the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, that area, but that's only going to be temporary because God's thinking, I'm going to have to deal with them later. I'm going to give you, Abraham, all the land that you can see. He says, I'm going to make your descendants as the dust of the earth. So that if anybody can number the dust of the earth, then your descendants can be numbered. Arise, walk about the land through its length, its breadth. I'm going to give you all this land. What did Abraham do? He moved his tent and he came and he dwelt by the oaks of Mamre, which is in Hebron. And there he built an altar to the Lord. Where is Hebron? Hebron is in the mountains at about 3,500 feet, about midway of the Dead Sea, up in the mountains. It would be over in this region, Hebron. And so God says, I want you to go down there, enjoy the height of the elevation. It's nice and cool there. It's very fertile. Go and enjoy the time there. And I'm going to give you all the land that you can see, way beyond what Lot's going to get. His is only temporary. Yours is going to be an eternal thing. What did he do when he got there? He built an altar. What's that mean? He went to worship. Why? To thank God. So he left his homeland and did the right thing, made a sacrifice to go where God wanted him to go. And then when there was a family problem, what'd he do? He didn't exert his rights. He gave up his rights and blessed Lot and let Lot choose. And then God says, because you have made the hard thing, done the hard thing, I'm going to bless you beyond you can even comprehend. I'm going to bless your socks off. Think about your family right now. You said you had a person in mind who was a problem. Could be a brother. Could be your mother. Could be mother-in-law mayhem. Is messing up your life. Whatever that is. What is your obligation as a father? It's pretty simple. Be Abraham. What's he? He's a peacemaker. He's a person that stepped in and made peace. That needs to be you. I've had to do it. It's not an easy thing to do, to step in and make peace. But that's the kind of man that he was. When I was living in California before I came here, one of the things that I did is my sister was a leading title officer in the county. And so I closed all of her refi loans. I had a traveling business of closing all of her loans. I sat with a family one day, two daughters and a brother whose parents had died. And the parents were quite wealthy, owned a bunch of farmland, had a nice house on tons of acreage of farmland. And the older brother moved in and took possession of the parents' house. And when the parents died, he took possession of the house and all of their monies. And his sisters, he gave them nothing. And I sat in a meeting with them, confronting their brother. The one sister lived in a mobile home in the Sierras and was extremely poor. And one of the sisters said to the brother about the other sister, Larry, how can you do this to Martha? You've left her nothing. Her husband's deceased. You've taken everything mom and dad have. Who was that guy? He's Lot. He was Lot. See, you had a sister stepping in to try to be a peacemaker. That's what an Abraham was like, a peacemaker. Will you be a peacemaker?